Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground.
Love, John Denver. Couldn't be a more perfect way to begin your Spring Gardening Confidential with Jeff Anderson, the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. Happy spring, Jeff.
Good afternoon, Casey.
Well, I'm glad to be here hosting my first Gardening Confidential. Glad you're here because obviously you are the pro and have a lot of great tips for folks who are ready to get their gardens growing. And of course, we're going to take a couple of hours here. It'll be a break from the COVID-19 coverage. A lot of people are going to be looking for more ways to spend a little bit of time at home this weekend because a lot of great events have been canceled. So it's not even like you really have a choice. You're going to be spending a little more time at home. We're going to get some rain over the next day or two, so it's probably going to be a great-looking weekend to get some gardening going, would you say?
Exactly, and what better place to be than in the garden? So, you know, get out there, and I guess you can take your radio with you, or you turn to some music and enjoy your garden.
And in the song, John Denver mentions all it takes is a rake and a hoe. I thought we'd start out with maybe some of the essential tools that you should make sure that you have so that you won't find yourself needing something when you get started.
So you're going to be out in the desert garden, so a rake and a hoe is a good item because right now we're having an outbreak, I'd say, of mustard weed all over the whole county. London Rocket, sometimes it's called. But it's all over the place, and people need to get out there and take care of their winter weeds right now.
Anything else?
You might want to prepare for your summer weeds. So winter is finishing with those weeds, and you need to put down probably a pre-emergent herbicide for your summer weeds.
How about gloves for your gardening?
Gloves are good unless you got hands that aren't as tender. So people that have tender hands that maybe work in the office may want to put on some gloves. Pruning equipment, a trowel. Things like that are good to work in the garden.
And the Gardening Confidential is made possible by Sierra Vista Growers, supporting the community for over 30 years as a local source for native plants, fruit trees, vegetables, and more. Information at sierravistagrowers.net, on Facebook or Instagram. And at just before 2 o'clock, someone will win a $100 gift card from Sierra Vista Growers. The way to register for that is to call in with your questions or comments or join us on social media. You can ask a question there. Anthony Moreno is standing by at our social media desk ready to take your questions. So feel free to chime in. The telephone number to call, 575-646-2212. So once you have all your tools assembled for gardening in the spring, we want to talk a little bit about what kind of bed that we need to prepare. So living in southern New Mexico, our soil not necessarily as fertile as in other places, and it varies from place to place around the region. What do we need to know about getting great dirt to start with?
Okay, so it depends on whether you're going to grow in the ground or you want to grow things in raised bed or in containers, and then what you want to grow, whether you want to grow vegetables or you just want to grow flowers. In all of these things, one of the primary things that you need is organic matter. So our soils are very depleted in organic matter. We generally have less than 0.5% in our soils. 1% is like a huge amount around here. But we want to up that percentage of organic matter in the soil. It not only does it hold on to water and nutrients, but it helps with aeration. It helps plants grow better than our native soils a lot of times here. Even though you see farmers out in the field, they're doing very large crops, but that's the crops that they're doing are adaptable for that.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about all kinds of different growing for, you know, just around our homes and our own enjoyment, from the right kind of plants to put into your landscaping, xeriscaping items that are great for the desert, to growing gardens that we want to be able to harvest sometime this summer. The Gardening Confidential, also made possible by Baqueta Jewelers, with more than 60 years experience in the business, offering custom design work, repair services, and consignment jewelry online at BaquettaJewelers.com. 575-646-2212. Call in with your questions or comments. Let's begin with some good hardy plants for xeriscaping. If you're kind of just getting started, but you want some color in your yard, what kind of recommendations do you have?
So there's a number of native plants. I mean, if you're looking at trees, I particularly like the desert willow and one particular one called Bubba, which has got the most spectacular flowers on it. Our mesquite can make a very beautiful tree. Those are all very low water use in some of the acacias. When you go to the flowers, one of my favorite ones is Blackfoot daisy. They prefer sandy soils. They look really great. They bloom all summer with white daisy-like flowers. There's a zinnia as well, grandiflora, with yellow flowers. There are a number of the different red yuccas. There's been some different ones coming out that are coral-colored, yellow-colored, deep red colors, and they seem to bloom at least halfway through the summer. And then there's foliage and forms where you get in different kinds of yuccas with real blue foliage, real deep greens, real striking architectural forms. Your ocotillo is that way. And for me, for anybody that knows me, don't forget about palm trees. They're not all Mexican fan palms. There's some very cold hardy ones.
How many different kinds of palm trees do you have, Jeff?
Well, I have over 600 palm trees in my yard and probably representing at least 15, 16 genuses and probably 35, 40 species.
You have a very large yard, don't you?
No, it's only a quarter of an acre.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That is a lot of palm. You must feel like you're on vacation all the time.
It looks like I fell off the coast of France.
575-646-2212. Jeff Anderson here with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University to answer your questions and help your desert garden bloom. Call in 575-646-2212. Anthony Moreno is standing by with your for your questions and comments on social media if you're watching us on Facebook Live. Thanks for doing so. And you'll notice that Jeff brought in a couple of plants for ambiance for today's program. What did you bring in with you?
So we have a couple of celebrity tomatoes. So the store's already starting to put out tomatoes, and it's best around here probably to buy the largest tomato you can because the tomato flowers stop producing tomato fruit at about 85 degrees. It becomes really difficult for them to produce fruit. So we buy the bigger plant before we start getting into those really hot temperatures.
So you said this is a celebrity tomato plant. Is that
yes.
The largest variety?
No, there are bigger tomatoes. The easiest one to grow here are the little cherry tomatoes, and they will produce all summer long. Try to get that medium-sized tomato, and you'll get good production.
All right. And then what do you do after that 85-degree mark? Because it's not going to be long.
You just keep the plants watered. And you kind of suffer them through the summer, and then they'll start picking up again once it starts cooling off.
And how do you recommend they be planted?
Well, if you've got really long stems, you want to plant them deeper because the tomato plant, you have to take off some of the leaves, or if they're stretched out, plant them deeper because the tomato plant has the ability to form roots along that stem that you plant deeper. So you can actually start off with a deeper root system in that regard. And just keep them healthy. There are tomato fertilizers out there that you can use some of that to encourage them.
And what other kinds of vegetables would you recommend getting planted right now?
So we're coming into the summer season. So you could plant your cold crops, which is cabbages and kales and things like that. But if you plant them now, the season's going to be short by the time you get into the summer. And they're going to be really hot and peppery, like eating horseradish.
Really?
So you want to look at summer stuff, your eggplant, your tomatoes, your cucumbers, anything that's a warm season, your corn, things like that.
Okay, let me get to one of our questions. And this is actually a question that came in advance of today's program from Bianca, who says her questions are due to the fact that she used to plant vegetable gardens regularly but hasn't planted one here in Las Cruces for over 20 years. Now, due to changes we've seen because of climate change and global warming, she says, I don't want to plant too early just to have a late snowstorm or freeze destroy my garden. Plus, I have concerns about E. coli, salmonella, and listeria. So first, when is the best time to begin planting my seeds or seedlings outdoors?
So we can plant all year long. So we can plant in the winter. So you can do January 1st, you can do iceberg lettuce, you can do carrots, and you can do radishes. We actually have a publication that people can get from our extension office that shows the proper planting times. But we could do all season. The correct thing is to try to go by a calendar like that. I know we live in high elevation, relatively 4,000 feet about, so we can't predict the weather. Right now, we're having a good stretch of nice warm weather and good night temperatures, but it could drop. You know, we don't know that. So you want to plant, you could go outside and you can plant the tomatoes. But be prepared to cover them up if it gets too cold. But we shouldn't get super cold.
Good tip. This is the Spring Gardening Confidential on KRWG-FM and at KRWG.org. Streaming live on Facebook, we have Jeff Anderson here with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. And you mentioned getting those materials at your extension office. Where are you located?
We're located at 1170 North Solano, Suite M.
And for every county, is there a different extension service?
It's one in the same extension service through New Mexico State University, but there is an extension office in every county in New Mexico. There's 33 offices.
All right, so you can reach out to your local extension office
and
if you're listening.
And you should be able to look it up. You know, type in the county name. Like for us, it's Doniana County Cooperative Extension Service, and it'll come up.
All right. Very good. Her next question, what type of fertilizer should we use to lessen the odds of any sort of bacterium or pathogen? Do we need to have the soil tested first since some pathogens already exist in the soil?
Bunch of questions. So if you want to eliminate pathogens, then you're going to go with an inorganic fertilizer, so a man-made fertilizer, because they're just basically clean and they're not contaminated.
They are organic.
They're inorganic, basically. So the organic ones, like your manures, possibly can have contamination.
Right.
That's possible if they haven't been composted properly. But you want to work them into the garden well ahead of time. And generally, they've been not of high concern for contamination, but it is there.
Okay. And her third question, with the high population of jackrabbits, feral cottontails, squirrels, and the occasional skunk, would it be best to invest in making a raised garden, or would it be best just to fence off the garden and make sure there's no entry overhead for the critters?
Another difficult question. Raised gardens are great for home gardens because it's easier for you to access. It also gets it off the ground, so if you have dogs or any other animals that come around, you don't have to worry about that. But rats, squirrels, those ground squirrels that can still climb the beds and get in there, so you have to always be on the lookout and devise ways to get around the animals like that.
One gentleman who posted a video on YouTube recently had a chipmunk. He ended up naming him Chunk because he put one of those cameras out to see what was coming and taking his food from his garden. And he thought because he would come and sit right in front of the camera and eat the garden food. And so he ended up building him his own garden.
Yep. I work out at Southern New Mexico Correctional Facility teaching vegetable production out there, and we've been pretty good without having animals, but they recently had some ground squirrels get out there and start eating their vegetable garden. It's a difficult situation when you're in prison to control that.
I bet. Well, Bianca, thank you so much for sending in your questions, and good luck. Bianca will be registered for the $100 gift card to Sierra Vista Growers that we will draw for just before 2 o'clock when we wrap up your Spring Gardening Confidential here on KRWG. The telephone number to call with questions or comments is 575-646-2212. And let's move on to one of our earlier another question that we received earlier before the show began today from Lisa, who says, I moved to Southern New Mexico from the Midwest, where you can spit in the dirt and grow fabulous vegetables. That's quite a talent. Here, I've had no luck. Are there varieties of tomatoes, cucumbers, and corn that are better adapted to this climate, and do they need shade and help?
I moved here from Minnesota, so I moved here 37 years ago. The key to growing great vegetables is watering, and it has to be consistent. You can't go out there, like if you have tomatoes, you can't go out and water one day and wait a couple of days and then water again, because the fruit, as it develops, the skin will toughen up, and then when you put water on it, it's going to split right open, or it'll fall off if it doesn't get consistent watering. So consistent watering. So there are different vegetables. So heirloom tomatoes don't really work here. They are heirlooms because they worked out east where the temperatures were different. We have to look for those varieties that can withstand heat. Generally, as a rule, most of our vegetables do very well here. Cucumbers and eggplant, all those kind of things do very well. It's making sure you plant them at the proper season and that you take care of them, water them, like I say, is critical, and fertilize them.
All right. And Ruth asks, I would like to know what would be the easiest way to grow vegetables with limited space available, and which ones are great for beginners?
It's kind of what I do. I grow in raised containers or raised beds. So I've gone to the store, I've bought horse troughs, and you can get the 4-foot ones, small ones, and that, and you drill holes in the bottom. You have immediately a raised garden. You can put it on the patio. They don't take up much room. And then in there, you just determine what you want to grow. I like jalapeno peppers, so I'll make one old jalapeno peppers, and that's enough for me. If you have a family, you might want to make a bigger one than 4 feet. But you just, you can do your tomatoes, you can do your eggplant, it keeps them off the ground. You put good potting soil in there, you can control the fertilizer in the water, and it works out much better.
All right, and we're going to go over now to the social media desk. Anthony Moreno standing by for your questions and comments if you're following along on Facebook. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Anthony.
Good afternoon. We have a lot of interest in a couple of areas. One question from Leslie. She wants to ask a little bit about a method that's used with training fruit trees, the espalier method. She wants to know if anyone has had success with that technique here in the Southwest.
So I've seen pyracantha espaliered, and fruit trees you can do.
Can I stop you?
Sure.
Will you describe what that means exactly?
Oh, okay, sorry. I assume we all know.
For those of us who've never heard that word before.
Those that aren't gardeners, maybe they don't know. So espalier is taking a plant, whether it be a tree or bush or whatever kind of plant like that, and training it on a trellis system against a wall. So it's almost two-dimensional. So instead of having an apple tree that goes in three dimension, you've now put it up against a wall, and it goes out and up, and you limit how far it comes out towards you.
Where is the mind blow emoji?
So it can be done. Usually it was developed pretty much in Europe where it was cooler temperatures, so they would put the tree up against a stone wall or a building to give it more heat to ripen the fruit better. So they would, instead of it growing out 3-4 feet, it was only maybe 10 inches against the wall so it could build up that heat, and then they spread it out, got the branches trained out against the wall. You can do that here, but you know, peaches probably work. It's a lot of work, though.
Right.
There's another question from Leslie in regards to apples. What varieties of apples do well here in our part of the Southwest?
So it all depends on whether you like sweet or tart apples. I like Granny Smith, which is a tart apple. Most people like sweet. So most people recognize Red Delicious apple. I don't think it's the best one. Fuji's probably a lot better sweet apple. What you want to look for is the chilling hours when you're selecting an apple. You don't want to get super low chilling hours that are, you know, break dormancy at 100 hours, because then they can bloom in February. We can get a freeze and you lose the fruit. Nor do you want to get high chill hours like 850 and above, because we don't get enough winter cold and they won't bloom properly. So Gala is great. Like I said, Fuji is great. Granny Smith is great. Pink Lady is great. So there's a medium group there around 450, 650 hours.
All right, Jeff, thank you. And thank you, Anthony. We will be checking back with you just a little bit later on. And now we're going to the phone, and Tracy is on the line having some problems. We love the bees. We need the bees, but not up in our olive trees. Hi, Tracy.
That's right. I love the bees. I have many, many bees with vines and lavender and other things I grow. But I have planted recently, or in the last 5 years, or since that freeze of 2010, I had a magnificent olive tree that I planted years ago, harvested olives, canned them, and so forth. But since about 5 years ago, I have young olive trees, and one of them died because there is some kind of insect eating the leaves at little circles of them. And a friend said that there is a kind of bee called a cigar roller bee, Havana bee, because they cut the leaves with their legs and then they roll it up and carry it away. I don't know if that's the insect, but they don't attack any other. I don't grow vegetables as much as ornamentals, and I have some fruit trees, not affected, nor my roses. But I had two young olive trees die because the insect ate so many leaves that they couldn't do photosynthesis because they had no green on them, just stems, though they were supple and still alive. So what is the insect, and how? I do not use pesticides. I do bring ladybugs every spring into the garden and lacewings, but I've been very successful for decades without any pesticides.
Okay.
How can I protect my olive trees, and what is happening to them? Who are the critters doing this?
So I grow olive trees myself. I think I have about 13 olive trees in my yard. So two things can attack them. Leaf cutter bees, So they're not eating the leaves. They cut them with their mandible jaws and that. So they're cutting pieces of the leaf out. They will roll it up to make their nest and lay their eggs in there, and that's where the young will hatch. Oh. So it's, you know, it's, you don't want to be killing them because they're good pollinators too.
Right.
The other thing are grasshoppers. I don't know if you've noticed any grasshoppers around. Grasshoppers like to chew on the newly forming leaves as well.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go completely natural, you can use a Bacillus thuringiensis product, which is a fungicide that'll go after the grasshoppers if that is. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can, if it's really bad like that, you can get netting to put over there, a real fine insect netting to cover the tree until it gets big enough to hold its own.
Will the netting interfere with the sunlight that it needs?
The netting's white. It'll let light come in there, but having no leaves is worse than just reducing the amount of light on the plant.
That's true. That's true. I see. Now, right now, they're budding out just fine, and I'm assuming it's because those bees, how do you say, they're not...
active
they're not
yet.
They haven't been born yet for the season, as it
right.
were. Right. Okay, well, there must be the bees. I thought it might have been wasps because I have lots of vines, and I have found a couple of wasp nests, but not for the last couple of years. So it's the bees, and I love the bees, and I have lots of bees all over my rosemary and lavender right now, hundreds and hundreds, because the rosemary are blooming now. So I don't want to touch the bees. Okay, I'll try the netting, and I guess I can purchase that at any nursery, correct?
Insect yeah, I netting. Think you can get it at the, what they call, quote, the big box stores, too.
And how often do I need to put on that netting and take it off for sun and for how long?
Once you put it on for the season until there isn't a problem.
All summer then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then take it off and the leaves are there and then
right. It's
a stronger tree for the next year?
Right. So I wouldn't worry about reducing the amount of sunshine. It doesn't reduce it that much.
Okay. And we get plenty of sunshine.
Yes,
that
we get
we
plenty
do.
Of sunshine.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you for calling. Okay. The Spring Gardening Confidential here on KRWG, brought to you by Sierra Vista Growers, supporting the community for over 30 years as a local source for native plants, fruit trees, vegetables, and more. Information at sierravistagrowers.net or on Facebook or Instagram, and from Viketa Jewelers with more than 60 years experience in the business, offering custom design work, repair services, and consignment jewelry. Find them online at Viketa Jewelers.com. 575-646-2212. That is the number to call. And Kate is on the line, has a question about picking good fruits and veggies. Go ahead, Kate.
Hi. I'm wondering how to pick out a plant that's going to have wonderful flavor, such as a peach tree or a tomato plant. A friend of mine grew peaches on one tree. They were delicious, and the other tree, they were awful. And even in the grocery store, sometimes those veggies aren't that flavorful anymore because they're, you know, planned for packing and traveling and all that. So how can we pick something for our garden that would taste really good?
And we've talked a lot about tomatoes already, so we've given some great examples mm-hmm. there. Let's focus on the peaches.
So letting it ripen on the tree as much as possible before the green scarab beetles come and eat them. So that's a big problem here. Once they start ripening like that, when they're at the peak of flavor and richness, the green scarab beetles come in, and that's very hard to control organically at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But picking good varieties, Alberta, Hale Haven, Ranger are all really great peach varieties for this area. So I'd avoid the nectarines. They bloom too early, and generally we don't get crops on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're more susceptible to certain other insects.
So you said Alberta, Ranger, and...
Hale Haven? Yes.
Okay.
Those are good varieties. I haven't tried everything. There could be other really good varieties, but, you know, selecting the variety you like and letting it mature on the tree, although with apples, it's a little bit of the opposite. You have to know when it matures because they're not going to turn red necessarily here when they're ripe. By the time they turn red, some of them are yellow, they're mushy on the inside, so you got to anticipate and start testing when they're fully mature and test the sugars in them.
And what do we do about those bugs that go after peaches?
Well, I could say you can bag your fruit with bags, or you can put netting around them, insect netting, which is a lot of work, or a week before they're ready, 14 days or so, you can use 7. And I know a lot of people don't like pesticides, but 7's been around for a long time, and 7 will keep them clean until you harvest them.
Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call, Kate. Registered now for a $100 gift card to Sierra Vista Growers, which we'll draw for at the end of the show today. We'll be going until 2 o'clock. Obviously, a lot of talk about the developments with coronavirus, and so many events and public gatherings are being canceled. In fact, an order from the health department in the state of New Mexico today to suspend any gatherings that they call a mass gathering, but that's 100 people or more. So we certainly are going to anticipate more cancellations along the way. People will be looking to stay home, especially those who do have compromised immune systems or respiratory conditions. You'll be looking for something to do at home. And so gardening might be the perfect fit for you. And if you do want to follow along with updates on the coronavirus, you can stay tuned here to KRWG. And there's a special page for you at KRWG.org. 575-646-2212. If you have a question for Jeff, or maybe a comment or a gardening tip of your own based on something that you've heard somebody talking about so far. We had a question come in before the program today from Kelly, who asks what advice you have for a brand new vegetable gardener in Zone 5B.
In 5B? She must be up in the mountain or something. So what advice would I have for somebody in 5B? Again, watering, timing your vegetables at the right time. I think my biggest advice would be is contact your local extension agent, because they're going to know more about your area than perhaps myself, especially in a zone 5B. That's kind of up by Denver, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What zone are we in?
We're in a zone 8A.
I see. And what does that mean exactly?
So that's based on the average cold temperature over a certain period of time. I believe it's calculated on a 10-year basis. So they look at it every 10 years, what's the average coldest temperatures and what range you fit in. So when I first moved to Las Cruces, we were in a 7A, 7B. Now we're in an 8A. Oh. So it's getting warmer.
That's some evidence that we can see right before our eyes.
Right.
Yeah. How do you adjust your gardening practices to account for that?
Well, for one thing, it's going to take more water.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm still adjusting because mm-hmm. I'm thinking all these years don't plant until after April 1st. And things are going to come out around April 1st. And I'm seeing things coming out 2 to 3 mm-hmm. weeks earlier than mm-hmm. they used to. So that means you're going to have to start watering earlier, too.
It is 12:33, and Emma is on the line, has a question about transplanting. Go ahead, Emma.
Is this for Anna? I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this Emma? Okay.
No, it's Anna.
Anna.
M-A, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Okay. We misheard. I'm sorry, Anna.
Emma for today.
Thank you. Anna, okay. We got you. All right. What are you transplanting?
I'm trying to transplant a peach little tree. It just came out of accidentally because I throw a lot of seeds off peaches, and now I want to know. Oh. I have it in a container, but I want to know when I can put it down on the ground. And it's a good time.
Okay. So just to let you know, when you get a peach from a seedling, 8 out of 10, a lot of times turn out to be a pretty decent peach to eat. The other 2 out of 10 are not worth eating. But you won't know that until it grows up in flowers and you actually produce a peach. So
yeah, I'm excited about it anyway.
So transplanting it, generally you'd want to take it out of the container and bare root it and plant it in the spot you want before it starts growing. Has it started growing already?
Yes, actually, it has a lot of
leaves.
A lot of leaves, little tiny leaves all over.
So you want to get it in the ground now, or you want to wait?
Well, I didn't know because the seeds I throw there was 2 years ago.
Okay.
And last year I noticed a little tiny thing, and this year it start, you know, having some kind of body.
Okay.
Lots of.
So you can keep it in. You can keep it in a pot for quite a few years, and you know, as long as the roots aren't restricted, you can keep it in a good sized pot. And when it gets big enough, then you can put it in the ground. But when you go to put it in the ground, what you want to do is take off the soil that was in the pot, kind of mix some of that soil with the hole you dug, and then put it in the ground.
Would you actually recommend keeping it in the pot for a couple of years?
When it's small, yes, because you can take care of it much better and it'll grow much faster.
Do you have it indoors right now, Anna?
No, it's outside, but it's in a pot. I could actually bring it in if I need to.
Nope, don't.
Don't bring it in.
Nope, they need the cold weather in the winter time to break dormancy and grow properly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It looks pretty strong right now, even though it's small. But I'm excited about keeping it.
Yeah, it'll peaches like grow fast.
You reminded me of the time, Anna, when I used to have a pet pig named Bacon, and all of a sudden, he used to enjoy eating cherub tomatoes, and all of a sudden, 7 cherub tomato plants just popped up in the backyard.
I called it
Bacon's Bits. Anyway, thanks so much for your question, and good luck with your little tree.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Hey, bye. I'll send you both. Okay. Take care. Thanks for everything. Uh-huh.
Bye. Bye. And next I want to go to Barbara, who, Barbara, ouch, I bet you've gotten stabbed a lot of times in your backyard.
Hello?
Hi, Barbara. Is this Barbara?
Hi. Yes.
Said, ouch, I bet you've gotten stabbed a lot of times in your backyard, huh?
Oh, not that many. But I do have a couple of major questions. I live on a very large lot that is not very well maintained, until I got here, and I followed the advice last year and of the extension agent, and I had a man weed whack all those surface weeds off the lot. We're talking about 1,000 square feet.
Okay.
And where I was going with that initially was that we had you standing by with a question about goat heads, and so we were talking about, so that was the vision that I had in my mind was stepping on
goat
heads.
Well, here's the question. I've whacked all the surface weeds off, including all these major amount of goat heads, but my question is, I've been told if I spread lime on this bare ground that I can improve the soil, and then a local agent has a large bag of fescue seed. I have a couple of questions. First of all, do I have to hula hoe or somehow get the chopped off visual goat head off before I apply that lime? And secondly, I have some very good experience with fescue before in Silver City, but I'm now living in Truth or Consequences, and I need to know whether or not that fescue could be adequately watered by rainfall, because I am not in a position to be putting a lot of water on anything to make it go. I'm just trying to improve the quality generally of the soil on this 1,000 square feet.
Okay. First off, don't be putting lime on your soil. Whoever said that is wrong, because what you're going to end up doing is making caliche, and you don't need more caliche. So our soils are full of calcium carbonate, which is lime. So don't do that.
Is there something I can put on that would improve it?
Yeah. You got to get rid of the goat heads first. You know, you got probably a lot of seed there, so getting rid of that. So if you're going to seed fescue, now fescue is not all that drought tolerant. None of that is drought tolerant. So if you don't have a watering system, fescue is not going to work out. So you're going to want possibly to do something like a buffalo grass if you just want to kind of cover it up. Bermuda will work kind of too, but you need water in all of this. You know, we're pretty low in our rainfall, so, you know, a lot of that's not going to be sustainable on just our rainfall here.
So the main thing, my view is, the worst thing you can do in a situation like this is go out and buy a bunch of plants and think you're going to start gardening. The main thing is get rid of the goat heads. What would be the next step to improve the quality of this soil so that I could garden on a limited basis?
Okay. So if you're going to garden on a limited basis, you want to get some organic matter in there, whether you go buy it at the store or you can get some well-composted cow manure, something like that. Or if you have in Las Cruces, we have the city gives away free compost. And I know there's a lot of sticks in there, but you have to screen some of that out. But here, that's what they do.
Okay.
So that improves the soil. There's also, here in Las Cruces, there's biosolids from the sewage treatment plant. Now, they have salt in there, but if you leach it out, they're super high in micronutrients. So that's a source of nutrition as well. But in TRC, talk to your county extension agent up there in Sierra County and see what sources are available for you in the way of compost.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks so much for calling. If 575-646-2212, we'll get back to the phone in just a moment. But at 1240, I want to skip over to the social media desk. Anthony Moreno standing by to take your questions if you're following along on Facebook. Hi, Anthony.
Hello. We have a lot of questions. First, I want to get to one person who, Janine, who wanted to ask about plant louse, how to get rid of them.
Plant lice, I imagine aphids. Sometimes they're called plant lice. How do you get rid of aphids? It's been recommended you can take a strong stream of water and blast them off, although I have not found that very effective. Their stylets are stuck into the plant pretty well, and they don't come off too well. You can use a safer soap solution, one of those soaps that are designed for plants. Now, taking dish soap isn't the same thing, and you can read things online that might work, but generally, it's safer to use something like safer soap. You don't want to use it repeatedly. What it does is washes the coating off the aphid, and they just dry up. There are certain, you get into certain chemicals, like malathion, used in the past, was very effective on aphids. There are certain systemics, like imidacloprid, that can work. They're systemically on them, and they're fairly safe, as long as they're, you got to be careful about flowering. You don't want to hurt the bees.
Okay.
Number of options.
All right. Now, you mentioned local extension office. Do they do soil testing in our area?
We do not do soil testing. We did probably about 8 to 10 years ago. Nowadays, you have to send it to a company, and Ward Laboratories in Nebraska has been a very good company, but there's AIS Labs in Phoenix. There's a number of them around. But if you're going to have it tested, you want to make sure you have it tested on a Southwest soil conditions. You don't want to send it to like Auburn and they test it with acidic elements and that, and you get totally false readings. So whatever lab you use, you want to make sure they know you're testing in a Southwest position.
Is there an alternative to soil testing?
For what?
Just to get the information that
you... not really. I mean, if you're a really good farmer and that you kind of know what you've done, you know what your soil's like, there's a soil web survey. So that's you kind of have to really learn how to use the site. It's not that easy. Even at me, myself, I can't. I find it difficult at times. But it has really great information about what your soil type is, what your pH is, some of the different characteristics, whether you got caliche underlying. It's really good, but you got to learn how to use it.
What kind of cost is associated with sending your soil away for testing?
So a test generally runs probably around $25, $28. It's not terribly expensive like for a homeowner.
All right. Anthony, thank you very much.
No problem.
And back to the phone at 575-646-2212. Thank you so much for holding. Karen, what is your question?
You guys, soil. That's what I'm calling about. Barbara's questions actually were quite informative, the answers that you guys gave to her. I have raised beds. I'm a homeowner. It seems that my soil, year after year, has gotten kind of woody. And when I water, it just falls straight down and through and dries out so quickly. What can I add to those beds to bring it more muddy and less, the soil dries out by the end of the day? My things don't grow. They're thinly. There's not enough nutrients. Soil. That's my question.
So in your raised beds, you're putting probably organic matter, all organic matter?
All organic.
So organic matter, especially in our heat here, breaks down really quickly. So it's going to decompose. You're going to lose volume really rapidly. So you can keep adding organic matter every year to rebuild it. If it gets too heavy, you need to take some out. But it's decomposing. That's flat out what it's doing. One of the things I've suggested in the past is that people add sand, a really good builder's wash sand in there, and mix it with your organic matter, because sand is actually a soil.
All right. So upon adding as much as I'm going to need to add, I'm going to have to shovel a lot of that old stuff off into my compost pile or my mulch pile and add the bagged and then with the sand, would you suggest?
Yeah, I mean, if the soil's still good in your garden bed, you can use it, but sometimes, you know, you get fungal diseases built up in there. Sometimes it's good to take it out and start over again. And having a good mixture of sand and compost, maybe something like 60% sand, 40% compost, mix it all well together for a raised bed. The sand will give you good drainage. Take up volume. There are other products you can use too. There's scoria too, which is crushed up lava rock. Works really well in that situation too.
So I guess that's been it. I've been using the same old soil. It's time to turn and change it out.
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for calling. $100 gift card to Sierra Vista Growers for one of our participants today. Whether you're calling in a question, whether you emailed it in advance, or you're asking along with our social media, Facebook Live, Anthony Moreno at that desk, ready to take your questions there. And we would like to thank Sierra Vista Growers for making the Gardening Confidential possible, supporting the community for over 30 years as a local source for native plants, fruit trees, vegetables, and more. Information at sierravistagrowers.net, on Facebook or Instagram, and to Baqueta Jewelers with more than 60 years experience in the business, offering custom design work, repair services, and consignment jewelry online at BaquettaJewelers.com. Jeff Anderson here with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. Getting ready. The temperatures are warming up and it's going to be raining the next day or two. So this weekend then will give way to some sunshine and warmer temperatures. A great weekend to get out and get those gardens started. Earlier, someone mentioned something I wanted to get back to.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's gotta be a little rain sometime.
What do roses need to thrive in our area?
Oh, roses are difficult here. So first off, pick the right varieties. And be prepared for aphids and other pests, and be prepared for in the fall possibly powdery mildew and black spot. So you want to make sure you pick roses that are disease resistant. Other than that, roses actually grow really well here, at least in the spring. So you'll get very good flush of flowers. They'll look beautiful, but we have a lot of thrips. And people often call our office, ask, my roses were going to bloom, and all the buds are turning brown like they're all burnt up.
Mm.
And that's thrips. Thrips are really very super tiny, and you could take out a piece of white paper and tap your flower, and you'll see these little kind of specks running around. They're a little elongated, and they'll run around. There's not much you could do for that except chemicals. Mm. And so their systemic insecticides like imidacloprid will help with controlling those thrips so that your roses will bloom beautifully. That's about all you can do. Keep your roses watered during the summer. Your roses, you know, that nice 5-inch rose is probably only going to be a 2-inch rose by summer. And it's the heat. The heat affects them, and then come fall, they'll pick up. The other problem with roses here is that we have a lot of salt in our water. So during the summer, we get a lot of questions like, why are my rose leaves all burning up and turning yellow? You want to keep water off the leaves of your roses and only spray them down once in a while, but you don't want that on all the time. Because every time you put our water on those leaves, it leaves a little bit of salt behind until that salt builds up and starts burning them. But that can naturally occur because our water has a lot of salt, too.
Would there be something that we could do that would make sense to, say, put the water out, treat it in any way, or just let it sit?
Well, I went to a house one time, and they had their whole house plumbed for RO water, which is reverse osmosis water, which is really overkill. So no wonder their plants look so beautiful. I said, why do your plants look so beautiful? And they said, well, we bought this house. It came with RO water in the whole house. So that's really something. But using mulches to control how much water is being lost in an evaporated way. So cover them with good mulch layers, having that organic matter in the soil, choosing the varieties that are more resistant. So figuring out what those varieties that are resistant takes a little more effort. I believe there's still a Rose Society in El Paso that might be able to help out on that.
All right. And we had an off-air question about, and you mention it every time you talk about it. A lot of people don't want to use chemicals and pesticides. And somebody did ask, what's the best way to get rid of goat heads without using pesticides or chemicals? And I seem to recall in the Fall Gardening Confidential, I think pull them was the right answer.
That is the right one. You get out there before they form seed and pull them out. The other thing you could do, as long as you don't burn up the world, is go out and try to torch as much as it. You know, they make these torches, these propane torches, and go out there and try to burn them up and, you know, cook those seeds.
And that's the thing, if the winds are picking up, you know, when we are under a red flag warning or anything like that, we just keep our eye on those conditions so that we're not playing with
water
fire.
Handy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shovel
Let's go
and
back.
Water.
Let's go back to the phone, 575-646-2212, your Spring Gardening Confidential. We're just a little more than 10 minutes away from your next NPR News update here on KRWG. This is KC Counts along with Jeff Anderson, Cooperative Extension Service Office at New Mexico State University. And I believe that our next caller is on the line about gardening events in town, and that is going to be Candy. Candy, hi. Welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Thank you. My daughter was a county extension agent, and her reply when somebody would say, what can I do to grow beautiful gardens in this beautiful roses in this climate, she would say, move to England.
That's true. Roses grow beautifully there.
That's they do. My question is this. The public service company has a day in the early summer, late spring, when they invite everybody to come over and look at their low-maintenance garden plants, which are beautiful, and they have coffee, and they sometimes give you a donut and some mulch and some plants and some it's just a swell thing. Does anybody know when that's going to be this year?
No. Although I think Rhonda Diaz with the Water Utilities, you probably would ask her.
Rhonda Diaz, and it might be the Water Utilities. I just don't remember. I went 3 years ago, and it was great fun. So see you guys there whenever it is.
Sorry about that. You did mention, Jeff, that there is a home and garden show coming up later this month.
Coming up, the 28th and 29th of March, I believe. So that's coming up at the end of March here. So hopefully we're still going to have it.
Where is it? Who, what, when, where, why? Come on.
Oh, it's at the Las Cruces Convention Center.
Okay.
It's free this year, free for anybody wanting to get in, your families, everything to get in there.
Will you be there yourself?
I will.
The price is right.
I'm going to be there with the Master Gardeners. We're actually going to have a TV set up this year since we're not going to be doing any lectures this year. We're going to have a TV set up with a looping of information on the screen.
Thank you, Candy.
Well, and please, one more time, tell us when.
I believe it's March 28th and 29th. That's a Saturday and
Thank
Sunday.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much, Candy. Good to hear from you. On a related note, back to the social media desk now, Anthony Moreno, you said you had a question about a tour?
Yeah, we had one person on our social media page wanted to know if the Las Cruces Tour of Gardens still existed, and is that ever coming back?
Are you familiar with that, Jeff?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
So I believe it ended like 3 years ago, and it was put on by the Las Cruces Garden Clubs here in town. And the reason it ended is people are getting older, and they don't have any new volunteers coming in. So it's a lot of work for people that are older to continue it, so they decided to stop, and there wasn't really anybody to pick up those reins.
So would you say it's a hobby that's kind of going away with the younger generations?
I hope not. I mean, gardening is wonderful. You could create your own paradise. Look at, we're having COVID-19. What better place to go in your own backyard and relax so you're away from people and you're with your family and have that beautiful sanctuary to be in? So there's so many pressures and everything on everybody, and everybody's running around. You don't need to always be out shopping.
Well, for those folks, maybe they can contact the gardening club if there was any other options. Do you have contact with somebody that we should reach out to?
You should be able to look up the gardening clubs online.
Okay.
So there's like High Hopes and some of the other ones around.
Okay. And what else do you have for us, Anthony?
Okay, we have more questions. One was from someone who is very interested in growing pumpkins for Halloween. When should they plant the seeds?
So you want to plant them, depending on how large you want the pumpkins to go, early in the season. As soon as it warms up enough for the seeds to germinate outside, you should be out there by 1st of April, get them in the ground. So they're something that grows all summer long. So if you're growing them correctly and you're pushing them, then you should be able to grow that vine and get that pumpkin. So I do know that the largest pumpkin, how you get that, you take all the other pumpkins off the vine and you keep growing it. So it's like it's on intensive care. So you got to fertilize it real carefully, water it real carefully, and you get really large pumpkins.
Okay, now we also have a question from George, who is looking a little closer in the future towards the 4th of July. He says that they used to have a peach tree that would give them fruit for a 4th of July pie. They're not really sure what variety it was, but he would like to know what early fruiting variety should he look for that will work well here in Las Cruces.
So that's hard to say on a peach. You can get an early Alberta. It depends on our spring. If we get an early spring, you're going to get earlier peaches. If our spring comes late, you're going to get later peaches, so it's going to adjust. If you get too early a blooming peach, the flowers are going to end up frozen. So not knowing what variety you had to begin with, I had a peach tree. It was supposed to be Alberta. It's obviously named wrong. It bloomed in February, and there are no peaches on it. So
that's a tough one.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
All right. Well, Anthony, thank you very much. And by the way, we've said this before, but if anyone out there has had great experience, and there's a tough one for Jeff, but you happen to have had an experience that you can share, we would love to hear from you. 575-646-2212 is the telephone number, and a gardening question next from our phone lines. And let's see if we can link up with Josine. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for waiting. We appreciate it. What do you have for us?
Yes, I had bought two fruit trees last month from one of the home improvement stores. And one is a dwarf, a grapefruit, and the other one is a red strawberry mango. And each are, the mango is about 6 feet, and the dwarf is about four, the dwarf grapefruit. And is it, can I take it out now to plant them in the ground? Is it still too early? They're in my foyer, so they're keeping relatively comfortable, I think, in there with the plant light as well. And I have a lot of other trees, and I'm wondering whether I should maybe plant them along a more sunny rather than a shaded area.
So first off, I want to tell you, in regards to the mango, it is not going to grow outside here. It's too cold. They're tropical. So
yes,
it will not withstand our winters there at all. And, you know, you're going to have to keep it in a pot for the life of it, unless you move to Florida, southern Florida.
Yeah, okay. But, yeah, I was considering that as well. Yes, I was considering it. So it looks really good right now. So
keep it in part shade. It might suffer some nutrient deficiencies in our alkaline water and soil conditions here.
Okay.
So
should I use some citrus fertilizer? Or?
Yeah, citrus fertilizer would be good. Now, you said you had a grapefruit?
Yes, I have a dwarf.
So, you know, that's another thing. Unless you know what you're doing, you had a real protected climate. I've seen grapefruit grown out here, but generally that's going to be a patio item that you're going to have to take in the winter or at least put in the garage where it doesn't get super cold. But
yes,
I have known people that have started grapefruit from seed, and they will come true from seed and growing them outside. And it went, there was one big one off of Solano, and it went through the 2011 freeze, and it froze the ground, but it came back up, and it's still there growing today.
Wow.
Oh, that's great. And also, I have maples, and they're doing fine.
What kind of maples?
They said they wouldn't be. I have maple, the Japanese maples.
Yeah, they'll do fine in the spring when they come out, but our water has a lot of salt, and our air is dry, so I have a Japanese maple in a pot as well, and it gets some leaf burn by late summer.
Yeah. Mine are closer to the wall, so I think they stay relatively cool. But I was wondering if I could do the same thing with my grapefruit. With just being having a more protective area, I could keep them in the foyer, but I'm wondering, would it be enough sun? I do have two large windows, and there is a lot of sun that comes through, but do they need direct light?
No, they don't need direct light. And it's good to put them outside for the summer. We call summering them outside so you can leach the salts out of the pot and then bring them in for the winter. Can bring them in late. You know, in a pot, they're cold hardy, probably into about above 25 degrees. You can just keep it there.
Okay.
Okay. This sounds great. I think you've helped me a lot, and I think that I could probably keep them at least inside the foyer. Yeah. But I'm just wondering one more question. Do I have to, with this citrus fertilizer, do I have to remove the soil that's already there and put
no.
in new soil?
No, you can keep it when the soil it's in, and if you put it in a bigger pot, just use a really good potting soil.
Okay. All right.
And if you have any more questions, you can call me at my office, 525-6649.
Okay, I will do
Thank
it.
You.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Bye.
Josine. We are just seconds away from an NPR news update coming up at 101, and we have got another hour of the KRWG Spring Gardening Confidential with Jeff Anderson next.